And for our next episode of Dennington Discussions, Hilary Smith talks to Daphne Canning.
I'm Hilary Smith, and today I'm talking to Daphne Canning. Daphne now lives in Adderbury, close to her daughter. But back in 1947, after her marriage to Ron, and at the end of their war service, she moved with him to his home village, Deddington. There, apart from a few forays to live in Banbury and Heathrop, she stayed for 60 years. Hello, Daphne. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you.
That's all right, Hilary. Nice to speak to you.
So here you are, just married, yeah. A Londoner, yeah. With all the experience of the war still vivid. Yeah. And you find yourself in a country village. Well, what was that like?
Well, it was a bit of a surprise, really, because I'd lived modern for those days. It was a new house since built in 1933, and of course it had all the modern amenities and everything. Yeah. Yeah. Not central heating, but everything else, bathroom and that. And I have to admit that it was a bit of an eye-opener to find... No, I knew all about toilets at the end of the garden and that sort of thing, but to have to actually use them was a bit different.
It's amazing. Those are the things we notice most, aren't they?
Very much, yes, very much. But we had a little cottage in St. Thomas Street, and we were very happy there. It was only a one up and one down and a toilet in the garden, but... It was lovely. We were very happy there, and that's where I had my first two boys.
Okay, right. Yes. Okay, I just wanted to capture those first impressions whilst we're on the theme of the country, but we'll return to Deddington later.
Yes.
But for the moment, can we go back to your early life in London?
Certainly.
You were born in Cricklewood,
and
when you were eight, you moved to Wembley.
Wembley, that's right, yes. Very close to, not very far, from the Wembley Stadium, because when we were children, we used to wander down there. I mean, I think of how children don't wander about like we used to, but we used to go down to the old exhibition grounds. They were derelict by then. And all around the Wembley Stadium, which was new, or almost new in those days. And it was wonderful, really. I don't know, when the Indian exhibition was derelict, of course, but it had two lions on the posts at the entrance, and that's where Wembley Lions got their name.
Oh, that's interesting, yes. Of course, you have the freedom of the streets, really, didn't you?
Yes, we did, I mean, there was a lot of traffic, even though, well, in that area in those days, but nothing like it is now.
No.
And we used to, there were fields, just a few doors, a few houses down from where we were living, and we could play in the fields. And, they keep the old footpaths, and the houses opposite us had a footpath running through their gardens, so that they had their gardens split in half. Split in half, just a footpath. And we used to have wonderful games of hide-and-seek and chase all round these. We had a really lovely time.
Maybe people were more tolerant of children running around then.
I suppose they were, but mostly I suppose most of the people were young anyway and got children proud of us,
What about school? Can you remember?
I went to the local primary school until I was 11. I can't remember an awful lot about it because I didn't really like school very much, and we had to walk a long way to get there. You didn't have any buses or anything.
Why didn't you like it? Do you remember, as a little girl?
Because I was a bit of a duffer. I wasn't very clever. And but I did love sewing and knitting, and they did teach us sewing and knitting, so I was very happy to do that.
Yes.
But when it came to actually 11 plus, I was just hopeless, absolutely hopeless. So I ended up by, of course, in those days, you either went to the county school or private school. So my parents were generous enough to send my sister and me to a private school. And we went to, of course, she was 2 years younger than me, but we went to the convent school in Harrow-on-the-Hill.
And was that a better education?
Well, it was. I mean, it would have been if I'd been a bit more attentive, a bit more sensible.
So you weren't really sensible in those days?
Not really, I think. No, I didn't appreciate my advantages, really. I was a bit useless. And then when I was 14, of course, the war was declared then, or, well, 14 and a half. And so my parents thought it wasn't much use me staying at the convent because I wasn't going to get any higher education certificate or anything. So I went to Pitman's College Business School in Kilburn, which was actually, I enjoyed that very much.
Oh, that's interesting. A contrast to school, then.
Yes.
What was different about it?
Well, very much, it's all on a business style.
So it made sense to you?
Yes, we were all called Miss or Mister. You see, Miss Tucker, as my name was in those days, Miss Tucker, and we all had a number, of course, because where we joined the college. But and I learnt shorthand, which is like a code, and I liked things like
that.
Right. Not knowing really that I suppose it was a portent of what I was possibly going to
do. So suddenly you felt at home with it.
I did, really. Yes, shorthand and bookkeeping and commerce, and I did learn French, which I'd done at school, which was reasonable. I won't say I was very clever at it, but English, of course, which I was quite good at. Yes. And the lessons, just like a school, but I felt much more comfortable at being in this.
So, in fact, that was a good thing for you. It sort of made education a different experience altogether.
Yes, it was. And I was 2 years there, and when I left, I went to work at a solicitor's, which was as a shorthand typist.
Right.
And that interested me very much, too.
What sort of jobs did they give you to do at a solicitor's?
Oh, I had to type court orders because the managers or the of the solicitors used to have to go to court every week and, you know, do, I don't know what he did, but I had to type out what they said and what they didn't say, and I did.
So you learnt a lot about things because you have to type them.
Definitely, yes, yeah. And wills and subpoenas and things like that, all sorts of different
things. So you're
now
17, 18, and you're learning about the real world, as it were.
Yes, very much, yes. And I had to travel by train into London every day. And, of course, the bombing was on then, so we were sometimes having to go down into the cellars to keep
the bank,
of the college. And fortunately, we didn't have much in the way of bombs while I was at the solicitors. I think there was a lull then. And then from there, I was there getting on for a year. And from there, I went to joined up.
And what made you join up? Was there a particular thing that?
Everybody did their bit, and I thought, if you were called up, you had to do what they told you. But if you volunteered, you could choose what you wanted to do. So I thought, I will volunteer. So I volunteered. Well, actually. That was when my father was in the Air Force.
Yes.
Then, and he was had been a wireless operator, and he was at a Y station, which was secret interception work, which used to supply. It was one of the many places that supplied Bletchley Park with messages to be decoded.
I see.
And he'd started in that just before the war, because everybody knew there was going to be a war.
Okay.
So
yes.
He then joined what was called the Civilian Wireless Reserve.
Yes.
And he used to do practice messages, which were sent from, I presume, London somewhere. and he would have to do them, take them down and then send them back to be marked if they were right. However,
so this was all preparation for the real thing.
It was really, yes. And then, of course, he got called up then, although he was really in his 40s then, but he got called up in 1939. And so he went off to France. So all this time that I was at Kilburn in the Secretarial College, he was in France.
Right.
And then I became a solicitor's clerk, I suppose you could call it. And then from there I went on to enter the WAF. I chose the Women's Auxiliary Air Force.
Yes.
Because father was in the Air Force.
Understand.
And I was familiar with it. And I thought, well, I would do... I suppose that because I was always interested in codes and things like that, shorthand and I thought I would try as a wireless operator, which my father had been, and I recognised the Morse. And
maybe it's in the blood.
It was in the blood. So I did that.
And did you find you took to it easily? Did it really feel, yes, this is the sort of thing I enjoy?
I'm not a quick learner, but once I got it into my head, it stuck.
Right.
So I think the way we were taught the Morse code, I think that was very good. You learnt five symbols at a time and you didn't go on to another five until you got those stuck in your head.
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
Excellent.
And so we'd, I don't know how, we were there for 6 months.
It's
quite at Compton Bassett. Yes. I was sent to Compton Bassett.
Yes.
And I was there for 6 months and I learnt the Morse code. And also we had to learn all about electricity and radio and or wireless as it was in those days.
So quite technical.
Oh yes, it was very technical. But you know, I've always been a bit more technical than I am.
Yes.
I don't know what you'd call the other
artistic.
Artistic in the least. But anyway, we had to learn to take a wireless to pieces and put it up together again, and valves, don't have valves nowadays, but it was all valves and things like that.
And what was the reason for you having to learn all those things, do you think?
I really don't know, because we didn't have much to do with the radio itself.
No.
Afterwards, but that was the course, and so you learned it.
But on the other hand, you had good background knowledge, you understood how it worked.
Yes, I had got a real, because my father was always technical and things like that. And I can remember him having a cat's whisker radio. And
what's that?
Well, that was the very, very first signs that there was words in the air for you to catch.
I've never heard that expression.
Haven't you heard a cat's whisker? Well, I can't remember the details of it really now, except that you had this little tiny wire which you had to put onto this bit of stone, and I cannot remember the name of what it was, but it's some sort of stone that attracts...
Yes.
It's all to do with magnetism and things like that.
Yes, yes. And so there's a reaction.
Yes, and if somebody is doing a similar thing with talking, I don't know how they I can't remember the details.
But
you catch the words.
Yes. So it's transmitted.
It is transmitted, you see, and you receive it, or the cat with the cat's whisker.
So they trained you in so that you really understood
the principles of radio. Which have all gone by the board now, because it's all satellite now.
So much.
But you understand about radio waves and things like that.
Right.
And you have to know about radio waves and how short wave, medium wave and long wave.
Why is that? What difference does it make for you?
Because it's the distance that they will go.
Right.
Without going into details, you want me to, because it's very complicated
don't worry, that's fine.
To explain.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be, because I've but I've never talked about this beforehand. Well, for instance, if you throw a stone into water, you see these ripples, yes. don't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's a similar principle to the radio, except that the stone on water is flat. Radio is all round.
Yes.
So you've got all these ripples.
Yes.
And the size of the waves, the short waves go up and down like this, but long waves go...
Undulate more.
Undulate further. So I can't remember which is which now, to be honest. I think the short waves are... Then, I know, I'm not going
no.
to even
no,
say...
No, don't worry. But clearly that you have to know about the appropriate one
yes,
to use in a
do.
Circumstance.
Yes, yes. So, but of course, with a radio, of course, you see, all you've got to do is to turn the...
Yes,
the,
and adjust it to tune it.
Adjust it to tune it in.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the only thing that we might have had to have done. But in fact, where I worked, it was all done for you, and all you'd got to do, pick up the headphones and either send or receive.
So did you enjoy that 6 months, or was it tedious?
No, I quite enjoyed it. Yes.
Stimulating.
It was, yes. It was also new to me because where Compton Bassett was built on a marsh down in Wiltshire.
Yes.
And... it was very damp there, but of course it had all been drained. But so we had really quite a variety of weather down there. It was interesting. And that was where one of the many places where they had the ablutions, as they were called.
Yes.
Miles away from where you were sleeping.
Oh, isn't that typical?
Typical. And you had to make sure you have a dressing gown because you've got to walk to it.
Oh.
Mind you, men are one side, girls are the other,
of course.
Fortunately, yes.
That couldn't have been much fun in November and December.
No, it wasn't. Not really. No, especially tramping across the... Well, I suppose it was like a field, really, and getting to the loos and everything.
Yes.
But, you did it because that's what you had to do, and there was no question about it. You'd huddle under your dressing gown and try and wash.
Yes, not expose too much flesh to the
air
not at once.
Not at all.
It'd be shocking.
Yeah,
yes, yeah,
that's
no.
Right.
Oh, I do sympathise. But so you were trained to be a Morse slip reader?
Morse slip reader was another course I went on. After I'd been a wireless operator, when I'd finished my training, I went to Hendon, which actually happened to be very close to where I lived. Much to my disgust, because I wanted to go further afield.
Yes.
However, because of this, I was able to live at home.
Well, at least
for a
you
while.
Didn't have to go across the fields to the bathroom.
No, I didn't, but I didn't want that. I
wanted to be away.
I wanted to be away. For a start, we lived in the Hendon had been a pre-war aerodrome. And it had been in the Air Force, the early Air Force, and they had got some houses, a block of airmen's houses, which were all joined together, and we were billeted in these houses. But what I thought was absolutely awful was you go in the front door, and the whole of these houses were all joined together with a doorway in between. They could be kept locked to be private. So that, you could have your... It's where the married quarters, you see, would live. But I thought it was horrific because the CO, or his equivalent, would walk through these to inspect them, to see that you were looking... They were... married people were looking after it properly. I used to think it was disgraceful to think that... That
no,
they should
no
do
privacy.
That. Absolutely no privacy. That they had a right once a week to walk through to see that you were keeping it swept and dusted and polished.
Yes.
I thought it was
And yet
dreadful.
There you are doing the most important work. And then they treat you.
Well, I mean, anyway.
But tell me about the Morse slip reading that you had.
Oh, yes. Well, after I'd been at Hendon for 6 months and I really didn't do any work at all because... They didn't really have a lot to do with them. It was all flying, you see. So I asked to be posted for another course, which was a slip reading course, which took... the training was in the Science Museum in London, Which I think was a blind for a lot of other secret work going on.
How interesting.
Yeah, it was. That's what the whisper went around, that's what it was. But anyway, I was billeted in some block of flats, which were luxury blocks of flats. They were very we had any of the luxury in it, because they were just bare rooms and
yes.
just a bed in each.
Yes.
And I think we had some hooks for our clothes. I don't think we even had a cupboard or anything, because we were not supposed to have anything private. Well, apart from our toiletries and
because you were
like
part
that.
Of the forces,
we're part
and
of the forces.
Your emphasis was what you,
yeah.
your day job really
exactly and
so
we didn't have any civilian work or civilian clothes.
So how long did it take to learn?
Another 6 months.
Really?
Yes. Although I could have done it in less, because I was already a typist.
And you'd done shorthand.
And I'd done shorthand. Not that I needed the shorthand, but it was the typing. You learn to do read the slips,
right.
which were a little narrow strip of paper
mm-hmm.
with a line going up and down, a little pointed line for a dot,
right,
and a broader line for a dash, and you learned to read those. And of course, it was all in code, so you didn't know what. Well, you did practice plain language, PL as we called it. But in fact, what I'd used to do, amuse myself, was in making the perforated slips, and I used to read from a book. Various chapters, and it was a bit of a racy book, so that it made them want to get to the next chapter.
So you put
what
you were reading,
what
so
was,
that the people at the other end could read the
could
book.
Read the book, yes.
What response did you get to that bit of mischief?
Well, they used to say, you know, what's coming next? Oh, you wait and see.
You must have had quite a reputation.
Oh dear, oh dear. I don't know. I don't think so. I was a bit of a mouse, really. But,
and yet you
do
put
these,
some humour into this.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. And then when I left there, I was... well, of course, I took my trade test on the Friday. This was the beginning of June. The first week in June, I think it was, when the doodlebugs had just started. And I took my trade test and passed it and went... that we were all given leave then, so I went off for the weekend to home. But, yes, that's right, went off for the weekend, came back on the Sunday and went to bed, and that was when the doodlebug fell and blew up the building. And that was a bit of a shock.
A bit of a shock is putting it mildly.
Well, it was rather.
A very dangerous situation.
Well,
tell us what happened.
It was, well, it didn't actually fall on the building.
Right.
But it fell in between two parts of the building.
So like the well.
The
between,
well.
Between them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And blew up so that all the building was pushed out into the road.
So the pressure did that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you...
The top part, I was in the... There were three floors above me. There were six floors altogether. We were on the third floor, and the three floors above collapsed and fell into the road, the main road, and, of course, bits fell on us too.
Yes.
I was quite lucky because I had heard it coming, and it's... a funny feeling, really, when you know it's coming and there's nothing you can do and you're just sort of numb. And I can remember I was lying in my bed on my tummy and I pulled the blankets up to my ears and I'm just... and, well, you just... tense yourself and wait to see what happens, because there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And I could feel these lumps falling on me, but fortunately they weren't exactly very big, because where I was in the room, I was against a wall, it fell out
the other way. So that was just
so it didn't
chance.
Fall on me, but just bits of the ceiling
yes.
would have fallen
yes.
on. A
yes.
lot of glass from the window, which was on the other side of the room, blew onto my head, so gracious. I was full of glass in my head. But you can't do anything about it, and you can't find it because it's tiny, tiny little
crystals.
Yes, yeah. And so there was nothing you can do about it. So for many years afterwards, I'm pulling out little tiny, tiny glass splinters from my face.
So they just worked their way out. They worked their way out.
You find you get a little red spot. Doesn't irritate or anything, except that you're aware of it and you find yourself touching it. And
how long did it take to emerge once you saw the spot? Is it sort of a day or two, or is it much longer?
Yeah,
than that?
No, I should think it was perhaps a week.
How bizarre!
It's
so
very
you
peculiar.
Got used to that after
you
a
did.
While.
Yes, you did.
Oh, just another piece of glass.
That's all. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's right. Anyway, we and I did have a something penetrated through the blanket which was over me. And cut my arm, had a lump taken out of it. It wasn't very much, it was only the size of a 50 pence piece.
But it sounds like that was a good idea to snuggle down into bed and pull the
blanket
around you.
Really, yes,
you,
I think it was, yes, it was, although I just did what I, you know...
Instinct,
yes. And well, then, of course, I don't know, that happened in the, I suppose, early hours of the morning, and it took us until daylight to get us out.
Lying there in the dark.
In the dark, and you couldn't see anything. I remember the girl, there were two other girls in the room with me, and she said, oh, my arm's all wet, and of course I think she'd got an injured arm, but I mean, we couldn't see.
No.
And then I could smell this gas, and then this girl, because of course it was all connected up, but it was all turned off,
yeah.
Except that I suppose there'd been a certain amount of gas in the pipes, and this girl, my friends, get my cigarettes out, I must have a fag, she said. And I said, oh, for goodness sake, can't you smell the gas? Because I do smell gas very easily.
Yes.
Oh, can't you smell the gas? Oh, my goodness. And she didn't.
Thank goodness.
It was. I mean, I don't know that it... But I think that's probably what caused a lot of fires in the...
The rupturing of the gas mains.
And the,
yes.
Yeah, so anyway, the firemen, they couldn't get us out through the windows or what had been the windows in the front... overlooking the road because of all the stuff that had fallen out. So, because the firemen came with their big ladders and things, and of course it weren't fire engines like we have. I mean, they were good fire engines, but they weren't quite as modern as the ones we have now.
They didn't have all the equipment and these high ladders.
No, so they couldn't get to us. So they came up what had been the stairs.
But there were no stairs.
Nowadays, well, in fact, even then, you had the lift going up and down and stairs would wind round them. And, of course, the lift wasn't working. I mean, it wouldn't have worked anyway. But the stairs were all demolished. Not completely. There were bits, big holes in them. And the firemen used to fix a ladder and boards and things across the holes. I do sometimes think to myself, by golly, I don't know how I got over that, because I'm not a very good head for heights. But of course it's dark and you couldn't see.
No.
But somehow I can remember walking down this ladder on a slope, and the fireman was sort of at the bottom, leaning up to hold my hand, and that's just in pictures. I just remember that picture.
Poignant moment of rescue.
Yes, yeah.
And presumably him being there just gave you the courage to...
Definitely, yes, that's right, yes. And then gradually we got to the bottom, and then, of course, we had nothing, only our pyjamas that we were in.
Everything else was lost.
And I think I must have found my shoes under the bed. I think I must have done, because I don't think I'd have walked down there without shoes on. So I put my shoes on, and I suppose most of the others were in the same situation, really. I remember one girl did start to scream, and I shout out, "Stop that bloody rattle!" I never forget it. I'd never sworn before, but I did then.
You couldn't take any more.
No, no, but she did. She yes. did stop her bloody yes. rattle. Yes. So
I'm sure you were all just in shock at that
I think
stage.
We were all, because there wasn't a lot of chattering or anything. It was
just silence.
Are you all right, Dean? Yes. You things like that. That's yeah. all. Yeah. And then we got home, got out, and went to this church hall, I think, where we were sorted out those who were badly hurt. There weren't a large number, but the girl in the room opposite us was killed, and that was very sad because she was such a nice girl. She was the one, she was the corporal, and she was in charge of, and she was such a lovely girl. So it was very sad, because we didn't hear at the time.
Oh.
It was only afterwards that
yes.
we found.
It was confusion.
Yes, oh, yes. And we got to the church hall, and then we were sorted out.
So how did you get home, Daphne, after that?
Well, they issued us with clothes, which, of course, they were short of.
Oh.
And we didn't have anything that really fitted us.
Oh, dear.
I think I had a skirt that was too long, and a jacket was too tight, and a hat with no badge, because that was dreadful, have a hat without a badge, not just from appearance but from official orders.
You have to have a cap badge.
But anyway, it needs must when the devil drives, and that's what we had to.
You weren't allowed to go out without a hat.
Not oh no. So we were given a hat, and I was sent out. I presume the other girls were the same, but because I lived close by, or reasonably close by, I was told I could go home for a fortnight and await further orders, which I did. And
can you remember that journey home? You must have been still shaking.
I really was in shock. I remember being on the train. I don't remember how I got there, but obviously I did. I remember being on the train, and I remember having to stand because it was crowded. And I think people were looking at me thinking, well, she looks a bit queer with that the uniform like that, you know, she didn't look right.
Yeah.
But of course, there we are. And I got home, and I walked down the road and walked in the back door into the kitchen. I suppose this was probably the Wednesday after. And my mother was in the kitchen, and she looked up, "Good gracious, whatever are you doing here?" And I said, "We've been bombed." And I laughed and laughed, because I think I do tend to when things like that, you know.
Just the relief.
Just the relief, yeah. And sort of the shock,
and,
really,
of course, your mother knew nothing about it.
No,
so there you were.
Absolutely nothing about it. And so she had no idea. And because I was laughing, and she had no idea what we'd experienced.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Father took her to see the building after the war, and she said to me after, she said, "We went to see that." She said, "I've no idea it was as bad as that." She said, "It was awful. There was nothing left of it." Well, I expect they knocked down what had been badly damaged.
Yeah.
I think they've rebuilt it now.
Yeah. But you spared your mother the full impact
stage. Yes, that's right. And I'm glad, really, because Father had, when he'd been in France at the beginning of the war, and then Dunkirk came, he couldn't get back to England, and he had to make his way with his companions down to Saint-Nazaire and wait for a boat to take them back home then. And that was when he had a lucky escape, because the bomb, he was going to go on a ship, but there was no room for him, so he was held back. And while he was waiting, they were attacked by a plane, and the bomb went down the funnel of the ship he should have been on and blew the ship up. And actually, I've found a record of that. because nobody would believe that the bomb had gone down the funnel. But
so your mother had her husband and you, very close shave.
Yes, bless her. She was, I often think to myself that she'd been very, nurtured. She'd been an only child and been very cared for.
Yes.
And, I mean, she was a brilliant to think that she coped with all that.
Yes.
You know, really, when I look back.
Yes, holding the fort, if you like.
Yes, in fact, I think the women during the war were absolutely wonderful, absolutely wonderful, the way they coped.
Yes, with
bringing up the children and the war and the bombing and all the rationing and everything
and
like
uncertainty.
That. Absolutely, they were marvellous.
Yes.
So
that, what can we follow that with? But you met Ron.
I met him. Well, actually, it all when we were at in London, he actually was also on the same course, but 3 months ahead of me.
Okay.
And we used to go to a forces club, or I used to go to a forces club in the Brompton Oratory.
Oh, yes.
In the beneath the Brompton Oratory, there were these vaults.
Yes.
And we used to go and had this forces
safe
club.
Place
we used
to go.
Do all sorts of, you know, dancing and we used to have coffee and things like that. Well, he used to go there too, but I didn't know. But he has told me since that he used to see me there. And I do have a vague recollection of seeing this young man looking at me, but he'd got a Ronald Coleman moustache and I couldn't bear them.
So he stood no chance.
No chance whatever, no chance. And he said he could remember asking me to dance, and it was like dancing with a broomstick. But however, I don't remember very much.
Who was the broomstick?
That.
You or
I
him?
Was the broomstick.
You were the broomstick.
Because I was so...
You didn't like the moustache.
Didn't like the moustache.
Oh, tell me what happened with the moustache, because this couldn't have been a barrier for long.
No. Well, that was all. That was finished. Then he was posted then to Chicksands Priory.
Right.
And then when I had finished, and of course, I wasn't posted actually after the bombing, because I went to my home and I had to await instructions, and I was told to go back to Compton Bassett. Where we would be posted, you see. So I went off to Compton Bassett. I presume I was given some proper uniform and things. I can't remember any of that, but I must have been. And also there was a great mound of debris which had been brought from the flats, which we could sort through if we wanted to find any of our belongings, but I didn't see anything of mine there. Mm. I was posted from there to Chicksands Priory.
Uh-huh.
Now, Ron had been working there for about 3 months before I turned up, and I came to... went into this. I was told I was on B watch, and so I went off to the place where they were doing the work. And I went in. I can remember now. I went through the door into this room. Great bank of Creed machines, which were used for making perforated slips, and he. I don't know how he happened to be up there. I can remember him standing there, and my whole inside turned over.
Oh, how romantic! Oh.
It was. It really was. I thought, oh, that's that fellow I used to know.
Well, but what about the moustache, though?
It had gone.
Oh!
It wasn't.
So your way was clear.
And my way was clear.
And so was his.
Yes,
he must have known that the moustache was not going to do him any good.
No. And anyway, from then on, we were always together then. Always together. till he was.
And of course, you shared an interest and a knowledge, an understanding of what both of you were doing.
Yeah, because he was really quite a clever fellow, and he picked it up quite quickly and much more, well, more easily than I did, really, because he could, if he could listen to a code message on the earphones and type it as he heard it, and I couldn't do that.
So simultaneous kind of translation.
Yes, I couldn't do that. But anyway, he used to.
And I also understand that he used his cleverness, as you say, when he was sent abroad, and he kept in touch with you. So what did he do?
Well, he went to India. He should have gone to Nagasaki, but while he was journeying there on the boat, the bombs dropped and the war with Japan was stopped. So, but of course the Eastern War went on, so he was posted to India, and he was sent to the communications centre at New Delhi, and they were trying out radio teleprinters in those days, because all the teleprinters you had in everywhere in the country were all landline. They were connected to the telephone network, and so they were trying out radio teleprinters, because of course that was really much it would go a further afield. Because it was only for a short while, because they kept brought in with the forget the words now that I want. Anyway, they had to be tested on the radio, on the airwaves, the particular
wavelength,
thank you, had to be kept open all the time. Otherwise, somebody else would pinch it.
Of course.
They got this wavelength, so they were practicing sending all these messages on the engineers were doing this, and he discovered, and in Chicksands was the other point,
the
receiving end of them. Ron discovered that they were in touch with Chicksands. Oh, he thought, Daphne's there. He found out when I'd be on duty.
Okay.
And when he could go. And it was always at night.
His night or your night?
My night, because he could, I don't know, he'd give up his spare time, I suppose. He'd go in and the mechanics would say, keep it open for us. And so he'd spend this half hour talking to me, and I used to have to slink off into the receiving.
You've had a unique courtship, I think, many people would have had that.
Yes, because, I mean, we were very fortunate to be able to do that. But, I mean, we would have been in a hell of a trouble if they'd been discovered. Dear, oh dear.
All your secrets might have come out.
Well, we couldn't say too much.
No.
Because the engineers were there, and it was all printed out what we were saying, because it, as well as going out on the air, it was all going on the teleprinter.
So everybody knew about your romance, in
fact. Well, most people did.
Never mind.
Yes, but that was it. But I think it was, that was, would have been 1940. Yes, 1945, and of course, and we were married in 1947.
So on his return from India,
his return, yes,
you got married in London, was it?
Yes, in Wembley, near my home.
Oh, good.
Yes, we married there.
But a girl has to ask this: given that there's rationing, it's just after the war. What did you do for an outfit to get married in?
I had a lovely dress from a hire firm, which called Beauty Brides.
Oh, what a good idea.
And it was a lovely dress, it really was. And it was new, it was made to fit me.
What material was it?
Satin, I think it was. Mm. Yes, I think it was satin and lace. And
made specially, so you were the first one to hire that one?
I was the first one to, yes. Oh, and, well, you see, I didn't fit any of the others, they were all too big for me. Yeah. So they said, well, we'll make you one because there's bound to be somebody else your size will come up.
How wonderful.
Yeah, I was quite lucky.
And what about Ron? What did he do?
He wore his demob suit, which was quite smart. There was nothing against them. I mean, they were all very, very good. They were very nice, the demob suits. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, you know, decry them, but I don't think they should because they were all nothing wrong with them. Mm. He had a...
And as, why did they give you those things? What was the reasoning behind
Well,
it?
Because we had nothing in the way of clothes, you see.
You'd live
to start
army.
Us off. And the men especially, they were... Actually, my mother did a very naughty thing, which was rather sad. I don't know why she did it, but I had bought myself some new clothes not long before I went in the WAF, because it was my first pay packet, and I bought myself a coat and some shoes and that, and a dress and skirts and things. And when I came home on leave, I went to put some clothes on, and they'd all gone. Oh, I said to Mum, oh, where are my clothes? Oh, I gave them away, she said. Oh, I mean, she was very naughty because they were mine. I'd bought them with my money. She really shouldn't, but my mother was very soft-hearted, and she had a string of people who would go to her and spin their long tales of no money and all this hardship and that, and she said, well, I thought you didn't need it. She'd got a uniform, and I didn't think you'd mind. Well, I couldn't, I mean, what could I say?
Yes, it's done.
It was done, and that was it.
So you had to start all over again.
I had to start all over again with new clothes and things. Yes. And so I did, and I think probably Mother helped me, because she was like that. She couldn't say no to anybody.
So it was a good side of her in a way that led her to do that.
It was, yes, it was
generosity.
Yes, that's right.
Right. So moving forward, then going back to the Deddington, you come back as a married couple, and you settle in. And then over the next few years, do you get to feel natural at home in the countryside?
Yes, I did. And I think really because, you see, when I'd been in the WAF, all my places I'd lived had been in the country, and I loved it. I loved it because partly at Chicksands Priory, where our huts were, eventually I went to stay on the main camp. They were all under a whole avenue of lime trees.
Yes,
absolute
beautiful.
Bliss. It was the most wonderful perfume.
Yes.
And, it was lovely. And so being in the country then, it got me used to being in the country. And I loved it. I loved it. I wouldn't go back to London to save my life.
So the beauty of the country really meant a lot.
I couldn't, I was so glad. Yes, so glad I was in the country.
And what about the side of you, Daphne, that had been so highly trained, skilled job? How did you get used to being a housewife?
Well, it's rather funny because I was quite happy. And I can adapt myself quite easily. But they used to laugh at me so much because I was always doing... table lamps, making, getting some wire and the plugs and that. And because I'd, you know...
Instead of toys or knitting, you wanted wires and plugs.
Wires and plugs and that. And they used to think, oh, you must be mad. But I wanted to have some pretty lamps and table lamps. And, I wouldn't say I was always doing it, but, you know...
But it sounds like you do have a very practical nature. Create things.
Yes, I am. I can make things. I sew and I knit or I used to crochet and do all things like that. But
so you can use your skills in all sorts of ways.
Oh yes, yes, yeah, very much so. But not nowadays, I'm afraid. I've got a lovely sewing machine which I would love to use, but my hands tend to be a bit shaky and not really very stable. So and I have what do you make? I've got all the things I need. Nobody wants what I make. I'm old fashioned.
in a way, yes, we de-skill ourselves, don't we? Because we buy things ready made. It's cheaper.
It is,
and so there's no incentive to
absolutely
do those other things. It's a loss, isn't it?
Yes, but when the boys were little, I used to make all their clothes.
Yes, you had four children.
I had
during
four children.
All the time.
Yes, and Gail, my daughter, the youngest, I used to make all her clothes.
Oh,
it was so. I love have to make them. It was, oh dear. But she didn't like dresses and things. She liked trousers because she'd got three brothers and all she wanted to do was boys'
play
things.
With them, yeah. Yes. Although, oh dear, so you were frustrated,
I
mother.
Was frustrated,
you mean you don't
mother.
Want to wear this frilly dress?
That's right. But bless her.
And how is she today? Does she, is she still?
She still tends to be, you know, jeans yes. and things, yes, yes yeah. But no, she's lovely. She's really lovely. She just lives around the corner from me, and yes. and that's,
that is such a support.
Oh, it is. It really is. Yeah.
And thinking of the present, I know that you belong to the Windmill Lunch Club,
yes.
so you go into Deddington a lot still,
yeah.
don't you?
Yes. Yeah.
And that
yeah.
you've been working there with Jean Rudge and others.
Yes.
Tell us what you've been doing.
Well, really, she wanted mainly memories. Now, not quite the same. Well, I've told her more about my youth, my very little girl. I gave her pictures of my mother as a little girl and myself and my sister in the garden, you know, playing and things like that.
Growing up,
yes, mm-hmm. because it was more I didn't cover so much area as I've covered with
yes,
you.
Yes, we've been through
been
a long,
through quite a lot,
quite a varied,
yes,
varied career.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
So that's being now collected with photos, and
yes,
it's being printed up,
yeah,
so that you'll have your own record.
Yes, yes.
To pass
I've got
on.
Some more photographs to find for
oh.
her, really, which I ought to, but I'm a bit lazy.
But at the end of the time, when you finish this,
yes.
this is something for your children,
well,
particularly
to
see
yes.
and to keep.
That's right. It's yes, yes. I hope they'll be interested. You know,
I'm sure they will be.
Well, there we are.
Thank you so much.
That's all right. Have I told you everything you need to know?
That is fine. Thank you, Daphne. Thank you very much. It's been absolutely fascinating to hear you describe your life experiences.
Well, there's lots more I could say.
Yes.
But, you know, I think perhaps it takes up the time. Actually, I think I've been very blessed because there are three episodes in my life when I could not have lived. One, when I was about two, I fell out of a car and, I could easily have been run over or hurt more, but I wasn't. I remember my mother telling me this because I don't remember anything about it. She said, Dad, Vin, Daphne's fallen out of the car. Because in those days you didn't have baby seats or anything. I'd been put in the back of the car and I suppose I played. There was no safety catch,
you
see.
I must have
and opened the door. And in those days the doors opened the opposite way so that when the door opened the wind caught it and opened it further.
Right.
And I fell out. And so by the time they stopped and realised, I was running out of the car to...
I can't imagine what your parents were thinking.
I don't know, poor souls. They must have felt awful. But anyway, I had actually ended up by having three scars on my cheek. And they lasted with me all my life except until about 20 years ago and they disappeared. But that was my marks, identity marks when I was in the WAF.
So what was the... It was taken that seriously?
Mm. Oh, yeah, it was quite definitely. I never really noticed them because they were always with me. And the second time was we went to the seaside and we had in those days, Mother had a mother's help to look after the children. There was only the three of us then. And she took us to my sister next to me and myself to the beach. And we went to, I can't remember the name of it now, in Devon. And Exmouth Warren, which is not there now, it's been washed away. But it was very much more pronounced in those days. And there were very strong tides round it, which nobody knew about, or if they did, nobody said. And I was swimming, and I think I must have been about 10 or 11, maybe not as old. But I remember going down this bank into the water and swimming and suddenly realised I was being dragged away. And I thought, I must get back. I must get back. I must get back. I must get back.
Swimming to that statement.
Yes,
yeah.
Must get back. I must get back. And I did. And I never went in the water again after that. But again, you see, people didn't make any notice of things like that in those days. Didn't have beach
watching.
Quite matter
of fact, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, I suppose I must have said, oh dear, I nearly got carried away. And Mum would say, oh dear.
Oh dear, have a bun.
Have a bun, exactly, yes. Yeah.
Yes, isn't that interesting change?
Yes, and the third time, of course, was after the bombing.
The bombing.
I could quite easily have been killed, but... Fortunately, I wasn't.
Fortunately, you weren't.
I was very blessed. I think I've been very blessed all my life. I really do. I have been very blessed.
Thank you. Thank you, Daphne. Thank you very much for sharing your story with us.
My pleasure. Well, I'm a bit of a chatterer.
That's what we want. Thank you. If you are interested to learn more about Daphne and Ron, you will find a photograph and an account of their wartime experiences in the book A Parish at War by Michael Olbrook and Robert Forsyth. My name is Hilary Smith, and this is Deddington Discussions on Deddington On Air. Log in again to my next discussion for another perspective of life in our village. Until then, goodbye, and thank you for listening.